This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Very busy news day. We are waiting to see, and this is weird, that the jury has not come back with a verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial in Kenosha, Wisconsin. They began deliberating yesterday morning. They had a bunch of questions for the judge this morning, and they're still out. And often, and this case is as cut and dried a case of self-defense as you will ever see. And the only, there's only one possible explanation as to how they have not yet come back with a verdict. And that is, I think, maybe one, maybe several of these jurors are terrified because there have been people on the steps of the courthouse, there have been people on Twitter who are suggesting that the jurors' lives are going to become a living hell if they don't come back with a guilty verdict. And there's absolutely zero chance of a guilty verdict. Then there are a couple of other things at play in this Rittenhouse trial. There are two issues on which the judge could just declare that the prosecution did things so egregiously wrong that the judge could just give a directed verdict and say, yeah, trial's over. With prejudice, meaning they can't retry him. The two things. Yesterday, the prosecutor in his closing argument, I guess that was 2 days ago, in his closing argument said things that the judge had specifically said that he could not talk about. And that is that Kyle Rittenhouse, after the shootings, he was silent. And you have the right to remain silent. I think we've all heard that phrase a billion times. And even though the judge had specifically given instructions that you cannot cite that as a reason why you should think he's guilty, the prosecutor said it in his closing arguments. But then much, much, much worse than that, it was revealed yesterday that there was video that shows what happened and that largely exonerates Kyle Rittenhouse. The prosecutor had a very high-quality, high-def copy of that video. He did not present that version in court. Instead, he showed a low-definition, grainy video that left some ambiguity. But if the, and the defense didn't know that he had this high-def version, and certainly the jury didn't know this. And the prosecutor intentionally withheld the high-def video that exonerates Kyle Rittenhouse. So there are a couple of things at play here. Number one, first of all, a prosecutor, their job, you work for the government. A prosecutor's job is not to get a prosecution. A prosecutor's job is to achieve justice. And if you withhold quality video because you're afraid you're going to lose your case and you're willing to use that to try to put a 17-year-old in prison for the rest of his life, what kind of a devil are you? So why didn't the judge immediately upon that say case dismissed? Here's my thought, and it's not a unique one. I've heard others say the same thing. They're very worried about rioting in Kenosha, in Chicago. They've got National Guard standing by in Kenosha. And the belief is that if a not guilty verdict comes from 12 of Kyle Rittenhouse's peers, then it would be easier for the public to accept that. And these bloodthirsty liars in the media who have lied about this story since day one, which is one of the great problems. This case shouldn't even have been brought to trial. This case is brought to trial to satisfy social media mobs. But the public would be more accepting of a jury of his peers unanimously saying not guilty than a single judge, because that looks too heavy-handed. But if the jury does come back with a guilty verdict or a hung jury, the judge then can rule on the prosecution's withholding of the video that exonerates Kyle Rittenhouse and could overturn the jury's decision by saying the prosecution has violated some basic ethics codes. And so the judge, instead of doing it before the jury verdict, maybe just keeping that in his hip pocket until after the jury verdict to try to tamp things down a little bit. But it's concerning that they're on day two of what is clearly a cut and dried, not guilty self-defense for Kyle Rittenhouse. There's just no question about that. And the jury still has not come back. So there's something funky going on in that jury room right now. We will keep you posted. And, of course, if the verdict comes in while we are on the air, we will bring it to you live. I want to talk about another kind of misconduct. And this is what I consider to be media misconduct. Kim Schreier is the United States congressperson from just east side of Seattle. Covers a big part of King and I think even into Pierce County, her district. Kim Schreier, she barely won re-election in 2020. She was running against a guy I really liked, former Army Ranger, Amazon exec, Jesse Jensen. Jensen spent less than $1 million on his campaign. Kim Schreier, the Republicans or the Democrats all around the country, they pumped millions and millions of out-of-state dollars into Kim Schreier's campaign. She outspent Jesse Jensen. She had over $6 million and Jensen had less than $1 million. And still, Kim Schreier won, and she was the incumbent. You're an incumbent, you outspend the opponent 6-1, and you barely win by 2 points. It was 51-49. So Kim Schreier is one of the many vulnerable Democrats in 2022. I checked this out. The Seattle Times and no local television station has covered a shocking Kim Schreier story that emerged last night. So I guess this is a Dory Monson Show local exclusive, because Fox Business actually broke this story, but the local media won't touch it because it's damaging to a Democrat member of Congress. Kim Schreier did not disclose until 2 months past the deadline to disclose it that she and her husband had bought more than $500,000 worth of stock in Apple. Now, why is this significant? Because it's a joint account. Kim Schreier and her husband have a joint account, and they bought $500,000 worth of Apple stock. Well, lawmakers, I talked about this with Nancy Pelosi a couple of months ago. If you want to be certain to make money in the stock market, watch what Nancy Pelosi and her husband invest in, and then you just invest in the exact same thing, because it never loses. Nancy Pelosi has all this insider info. She and her husband are worth more than $100 million. And she obviously funnels this insider information to her husband. Her husband makes stock trades, and some of them are very risky, highly leveraged deals. And that's why, if you're a member of Congress, if you have a security trade, you have to disclose it within 45 days. So Kim Schreier would have had to have disclosed this Apple stock purchase by mid-September. But it turns out she didn't disclose it for more than 2 months after that. How can that be? Well, it turns out, I'll tell you her excuse in just a minute, but Kim Schreier serves as a member of the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, which is a panel that deals exclusively with telecommunications and technology. Let's see. What is Apple Incorporated? Oh, look here. Telecommunications and technology. So while Kim Schreier's sitting on Congress as a member of the panel that oversees an industry that Apple is actively involved in, she does not disclose that she and her husband bought $500,000 worth of Apple stock. So why would that be? Well, she says that she was unaware of the purchase of Apple stock because her husband bought it. Man, what else doesn't her husband tell her? I tell my wife when I buy a case of Diet Coke. Her husband supposedly didn't tell her that, hey, honey, I forgot to tell you, but 3 months ago, about $500,000 worth of Apple stock. And I probably should have told you sooner, since you're on the committee that oversees telecommunications and technology. Seriously, how shady is that? How flat out crooked is that? Does anybody believe that knowing what the stock disclosure rules are for members of Congress, does anybody believe that Kim Schreier's husband doesn't tell her when he buys $500,000 worth of stock in a company that deals in an industry that she is on a committee for, a congressional committee? This stinks to high heaven. And it should be a huge campaign issue next year. But here's point number two on all of this. How does, like I said, Fox Business broke this story. Business Insider has this story. I did a Google News search this morning. Seattle Times, every local TV station. How has not one Western Washington media outlet covered the shady Kim Schreier stock dealing? Well, she's a Democrat. And Democrat is the party of the mainstream media. And so if they have a story that might hurt a sitting Democrat member of Congress, well, maybe we'll just hope that Monson doesn't hear about it. And then we can bury it. Sorry, I heard about it because I actually cover stories that are important to Western Washington, like members of Congress buying $500,000 worth of stock and not disclosing it while they sit on a House committee that oversees that industry. Yeah, I kind of cover stories like that because I still believe that we should be a watchdog of government in the media. So, shame on Kim Schreier, because they always say the cover-up's worse than the original crime. Her husband didn't tell her. He knows the reporting rules. He knows that she sits on that committee. That's the obvious lie. Her husband didn't tell her, and then the media doesn't pick up on the story. And then people wonder how we get stuck with the kind of nonsense, the kind of representation that has failed us to this extent. Yes, it's in large part due to the voters and many voters who are just uninformed. But one reason so many voters are uninformed is because so much of the media is slanted to provide attack on one side and cover for the other side. So I'm calling Seattle Times. Hey, do something on the Kim Schreier story, would you? It's a big deal when members of Congress don't abide by stock trading rules. It's a really big deal. Up next in the Fastest 15, more shocking news, completely unreported by all mainstream media. Alex Berenson, former reporter for the New York Times, solid credentials, now an independent guy who writes on Substack. He broke a blockbuster last night that is being ignored by all the mainstream media. Pfizer, when it was doing the clinical trial of the vaccine, Pfizer told the world 15 people who received the vaccine in its trial had died as within 2 months of getting the vaccine. Now, not all died from COVID, but 15 who got the vaccine died. They were mixing in all kinds. And a huge sample, 22,000 people got the vaccine, 22,000 got a placebo. And Pfizer said 15 who got the vaccine died, and 17 of the unvaccinated died. So at least you have a tiny better chance with the vaccine, right? Wrong. Pfizer lied about the numbers, according to Alex Berenson. 21 people died. And some might say, well, it's only six more. That's a 40% difference. 15 to 21. And when we're talking about what might have been the most important clinical drug trial in the history of mankind, you cannot accept a 40% margin of error. But it sounds like they wanted to make sure the number of people who died stayed low on the vaccine, with the vaccine, stayed lower than the number of unvaccinated who died. But it wasn't. And some might say, well, maybe there's a lag time in data coming in. Nope, all the other numbers are exactly the same. The only thing that was changed in their initial safety report to the FDA, they said 4 placebo recipients and 2 vaccine recipients died, one after the first dose, one after the second. The July update reversed that trend. 13 vaccine recipients died compared to only 10 placebo subjects. And so the numbers were fudged as this vaccine was being rushed. Does that mean the vaccine's a bad thing? No, it doesn't. Does it mean that the people who are skeptical of the vaccine are right to at least look into stuff like this? Of course it does. Now we have Anthony Fauci today telling us that we must all get the third booster to be fully vaccinated. Now you're fully vaccinated if you've gotten 2 shots. Now it's number 3. Got to keep the cash flowing for Pfizer and Moderna.
We've seen reports that the White House is and the CDC is preparing to expand recommendations. Is that coming soon?
I hope so. I mean, okay. I have, you know, I've been very much not holding back on the fact that I feel boosters are very, very important. And I believe, Julie, that when we look back on this, we will see that boosters are likely a very critical part of the immunization regimen and not a bonus or a luxury.
So get ready. You're going to have to go get the jab every few months. They say the vaccine's not effective, starts to lose effectiveness after 2 months. But anybody who criticizes anything, who questions anything, is a pariah and an outcast. We will continue to be healthily skeptical here on the Dory Monson Show. That is your Fastest 15 for today.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. All right, it's Wednesday afternoon, and that means a weekly visit with our buddy Brock Huard. See what's on his mind. It's coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's Hump Day with Huard.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. With a 12s, hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
And yes, on a Wednesday afternoon, Brock Huard joins us live. We are live, as Brent Musburger would say, with Brock. Hey, what's going on?
I think Brent would say, we are looking live.
Looking live.
Yeah. At the Rose Bowl. At the L.A. Coliseum, where I'll be this weekend for UCLA and USC.
Oh, you will?
Once, at one time, a very proud tradition. Well, a very proud game. But for the third time in 4 years, there'll be two unranked teams going at it Saturday.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah,
what's happened to the Pac-12?
That's a good starting point right there, Dory. Okay.
Well, before I get to my starting point, let me pre-start. Who are the coaches, other than the one, you know, your dad, of course, and the guys who coached you, but other coaches that you didn't have a personal relationship with that you've admired the most?
I think Dabo Sweeney out there at Clemson has done a heck of a job kind of rebuilding that brand and making him into something incredible. And obviously he and I share a lot of conviction similarly, but I think he'd be up there. Yeah. Chris Peterson at Washington was a guy I respected for so long, and he took them to a national semifinal just 5 years ago, remarkably, in a couple New Year's Six games and Pac-12 championships, and getting to know Chris on and off the field was a guy that I respected because he genuinely, truly cared for his players, that they were more than just assets for him on a football field. And I think he was quite torn with that, to be honest with you, as he stepped away from the game and left a bunch of them a couple years ago. So those would be a few that obviously the Tony Dungy's that I got to play for was a pretty special guy. And as you mentioned, my dad, so been around some really good ones.
The reason I asked the question is because the guy who really leaped to the top of my list a few years ago is Mike Krzyzewski, because a real good friend of my daughter's, he was a huge Duke fan and never, didn't attend Duke. Mom and dad didn't go to Duke, but he died in a boating accident. And mutual friend got hold of Krzyzewski, and Mike Krzyzewski called the mom and the dad separately and talked to them for like 40 minutes. And these are friends of ours.
Wow.
And I thought, how special, with no Duke connection. And the reason I brought this up to lead off today was I saw, you know, it's his last year. He's already said he's retiring at the end of the season. And one of the players on his team is his grandson. And his grandson was busted for drunk driving last night. And in the car was this kid from O'Day, who's considered like a top NBA prospect.
Paulo Banchero.
Yeah.
Know his family well.
Yeah. And they'd all be drinking. And I was thinking, man, for a guy who has this kind of heart and this kind of quality, what must that do to you when your grandson, who's good enough to play for Duke, and then makes a stupid decision like that?
Yeah, it tears you up, Dory, but I'm going to guess is someone who's done that for, what, like 40 years? I mean, at Army and then at Duke. You know, I don't think, you know, I think one of the greatness of those coaches that I referenced there, you know, from Dabo to Chris Peterson, and you have Coach K on that list, is those guys have dealt with 18 to 22-year-olds that are knuckleheads too, right? I mean, they aren't getting finished products. They're not getting the – now they're getting some of the most uber-talented kids, especially as he's built Duke in over three decades into a perennial national champion. So he's getting incredibly talented kids like Paulo, but he's getting those that are still immature, those that still make mistakes, still go to college and unfortunately, you know, can find themselves in situations like that.
Yeah.
And he'll probably use it as a teachable moment and a learning lesson for his family and for his grandson for the rest of his life.
Yep, good point. Hey, I talked to you about Jimmy Lake last week. The Huskies fired him. I wanted to get your thoughts because we're limited on time. This is unprecedented. 3-6 Seahawks. It's unprecedented since, you know, Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll teamed up together. What does this mean? And, I mean, what happens from here?
Well, they're at a crossroads, I think, Dory, in a couple different ways. Number one, the noise that Russell made this last offseason that we talked about quite a bit, right? That was very much off-brand and very off-putting to many, and even to the point where he, you know, gave the team three or four teams in the NFL he'd be willing to be traded to. So there was friction this offseason. I do think the loss of Paul Allen has been substantial. I really do. I'm a big believer. You mentioned the coach, right? Yeah. I'm a big believer, especially at the professional level, the collegiate level. You have to have your ducks in a row. You have to have at the pro level established, tremendous ownership that feeds in into general management, front office, that feeds to the coach, that feeds to the quarterback. And for the majority of Russell's career and the majority of Pete's tenure, you had that in Paul Allen, that he wasn't Jerry Jones, he wasn't front and center, he wasn't look at me. Behind the scenes, though, he was pretty incredible and highly invested and challenged John Schneider and challenged Pete Carroll. And I think there's a void there. I think they miss him, and I think that's playing out to a degree. Dory, you know, they're underdogs this weekend at home to a good Arizona team. I mean, they could be 3-7. Right?
What you just said is one of the many reasons I love you, because I haven't heard anybody else take that angle. But I was thinking the exact same thing, because now, you know, Paul Allen's sister is in charge, and the Portland Trailblazers, which he owned, they are in chaos right now. And I was reading about how they are losing great executives, and it's because, they say, because of this change in ownership. And that's not a slam on Jody. I don't know who they, you know, got running day to day. But yeah, both of his franchises are in, I don't know if the Seahawks are in chaos, but
for them, they're in chaos.
This coffee, yeah.
Yes. For where they have been the last 12 years, they have never been at this level. They've never been in this kind of hole. There's some significant challenges. It's not as if, okay, here we go, we're going to get everybody back, and they're in a brutally hard division. They got a very tough schedule. I mean, it's, and you got a quarterback that, you know, if he was griping last offseason, what is he going to feel after this season if he continues to get beat up and this team continues to struggle? So, yeah, there's quite a bit going on there. And I just, yeah, as I said, man, I'm a big believer in it. My older brother Damon was in New England with Robert Kraft, one of the best owners. He was then in Kansas City with the Hunt family, one of the best ownership groups, the Rooney family in Pittsburgh. Why they've been so stable, so yep, good for decade after decade after decade, is that ownership group matters. And like you said, this is not a slight on Jody. This is just the absence of an incredible presence that behind the scenes was Paul Allen.
Yeah, and the fact that it's happening to two pro sports franchises, I think, really gives credence to that theory. All right, my brother, it's good stuff. I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Is it stopped raining out there?
It's beautiful, sunny. Sunny, nice. I feel like I'm in Littleton, Colorado right now. It's so beautiful out here.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, it's more beautiful here. Promise you.
Oh, it's a competition.
I'll send you a picture. I'll walk outside and I'll send you a picture.
You know how much I love a good competition.
Send me your picture of your mud puddles and I'll send you my picture, all right?
Okay. All right, deal. Okay. All right, you can hear Brock every morning, 710 ESPN Seattle, and on Fox this weekend, USC, UCLA. All right, have a great week, man.
Okay, Dory, see you, pal.
Okay, see you. Brock Huard joins us every Wednesday, and we have lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
Oh, yeah, that. Rolls on. Come on. I mentioned in the Fastest 15 that Dr. Anthony Fauci says you now need a third shot to be fully immunized, and then you'll need a fourth and a fifth and a sixth, and Moderna and Pfizer, they'll just keep the revenues rolling in. Things change all the time. And some people just don't trust Anthony Fauci anymore. In fact, there is a song that is, it's really high on the charts. It's about Anthony Fauci, called Sad Little Man.
Sad little man sitting deep a lie. He's dead in his soul, but he'll keep you alive. Do what he says, not what he do, 'cause the truth is for him and the lie is for you. Sad little man, but he's treated like a god, as the faithless prayer to a fake and a fraud. Worship the man, pledge to his word. One shot, two shot, now you get a third. Sad little man, sad little man, you better.
Sad little man, you don't fool me, you sad little man. So he play some more?
Said a little man gonna trap you like a dog.
Put the text say yes.
While they eat you raw. Don't ask why, just comply. Cause fear is the drug that the doc prescribed. Sad little man, you can watch him on the news. Preaching to his choir while they learn the rules. Some feel safe and some feel healed. But they'll all hold his hand as he makes the kill. Sad little man, sad little man. You better run now while you know you can. Sad little man, sad little man. You don't fool me, you sad little man.
All right, that's a nice sad little taste of it. The band is called Five Times August that did Sad Little Man. And, you know, I've told you several weeks ago when it became obvious that he lied to Congress about funding the research at the Wuhan lab. And you know, then the National Institute of Health said, yeah, we did. We did fund some of these programs. I'm wondering if he'll be brought up on perjury charges. And then a story that we told you about months and months and months ago that the rest of the media just caught up with a month or so ago was funding experiment where they put beagles, docile, beautiful, loving beagle dogs, and trapped their heads in a mesh cage and then released flies that ate the beagles alive. That's evil. If you're capable of doing that, that's evil. And just the way he speaks with such certainty, you know, one mask. You don't need a mask. You need two masks. Two shots, you'll be fully immunized. 70% vaccinations and we'll be good to go. 80% we need. You need a third shot. 80% have to have the third shot. No, we need 90%. We need 100% now. We need to fire people if they resist. Yeah. I don't know if it's quite as evil as the song says, but maybe, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the sad little man. That I do know. Okay, we have so much more to do here on the Dory Monson Show. The Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, is going to join us. Yesterday, we told you the story about how you can actually cast your vote in King County on a napkin. I found it almost impossible to believe, but it's true. I'll find out from Kim Wyman how that can be true. Coming up as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.